This is Europe's most listened to independent radio show, your Richie Allen Show, back and live after the bank holiday weekend. I'm in good form, hope you are too. This is Simple Minds, Tony Gosling next. Thanks for joining me. Ah, there he is now. I don't know what it is with you, whether you play hard to get or whatever it is, but sometimes there's a connection issue. Anyway, we're live. I've given you the big intro. Tony, thanks for joining us today, mate. It's been a busy old weekend. You've been off for a bit because your show would have aired on Good Friday, so you're not back till Friday on the BCFM politics show. Let me just ask you this question straight off the bat. Horrendous attack in Sri Lanka on Easter Sunday, well in excess of 300 people dead, 500 wounded. There appears to be a difference of opinion between the Prime Minister of the country, Ranil Wickremesinghe, who says there may be links to Islamic State, but his own government are saying maybe not, maybe it's the local Islamist group, NTJ. This comes hot on, I hate to use cliches, but very soon after what happened in New Zealand, the terrible event there. How are you reading this, Tony? What's happening?
Well, it's even sooner after the fire at Notre Dame, of course. I mean, it's been a horrendous Easter. But, okay, so 321 so far dead in Sri Lanka, 45 of which are children. Now, this isn't mentioned very much in the mainstream media at all, because, of course, they're immediately questions are raised about what can possibly be achieved by any terror group killing children. What we saw with the idea of just killing young people was kind of introduced really with Anders Breivik in Norway murdering a lot of very young sort of socialist left-wing people. The idea that killing young people is somehow going to get you any kind of sympathy or further any cause is obviously ridiculous. The claim that this is somehow connected with Christchurch, well, the AMAC news agency, which is where these so-called ISIS claims come from, by the way, with no evidence whatsoever, ISIS 2 days after just say, oh yeah, we did it. And I've heard, by the way, apparently genuine ISIS commanders in Syria saying we have nothing to do with AMAC news agency. I remember hearing that on the BBC about 5 years ago, where they were saying they disclaim anything to do with AMAC. And yet we still hear when AMAC announces something, literally just a few words pop up on an anonymous website that suddenly IS is claiming responsibility. So we need to be extremely careful about, you know, saying yes, is the Islamic State is behind this. And of course we all know that there are a lot of very powerful forces behind the Islamic State, including the UAE and Saudi Arabia and NATO potentially too. Scott Bennett has exposed the financing of IS through Swiss banks like UBS by the West. So, you know, these sorts of claims need to be taken really with a pinch of salt. But with 321 dead, 45 children, we need to start using the sort of words that would be used in church on Easter Sunday, like evil. Those words should be used on attacks like this. I've also seen experts mentioning and making absolutely clear that there is nothing to be gained politically from these kinds of attacks. And therefore, it's very unlikely that this group over in Sri Lanka could have actually managed it. Previous attacks that they've been basically doing a bit of graffiti on Buddhist shrines. And suddenly they're doing all these sorts of terror attacks. So that's just a very quick, I would say, suggestion about, you know, there is one thing definite is if these guys, this little terror group over in Sri Lanka have got anything to do with this, which to be honest, I doubt actually, then they would have needed outside help. I just heard on the news, them saying they had to have help from an international terror network. Well, that international terror network may be Al-Qaeda, it may be IS, and that, to me, means Western Intelligence Services gave them some help. Particularly when we have no evidence whatsoever, ISIS not giving any evidence to say that it was actually us.
If it was, then.
Like Rita Katz, Pamela Geller, and the site Intelligence Agency, literally immediately after the attacks, saying that this was the Islamic State on their own websites. Now, Rita Katz is a former Mossad agent, a former Israeli intelligence agent. And when somebody like this comes out with evidence so fast, which apparently it shows that they know a hell of a lot about these attacks, then either you've got two possibilities. Either the Israeli intelligence services are the best in the world, which some people say they are, or they are the perpetrators of the attacks, and that's why they know so much about them. So we need to be, I think, really careful about just pointing the finger at Islamists and say, of course, yes, this is just retribution for Christchurch.
If nobody's got anything to gain, let's just say that just for the sake of argument, let's say that it is the Western intelligence agency-backed Islamic State, whom we're told, we are told, have been decimated to the point of near extinction in Syria. Let's just pretend it's them. Let's just pretend it is some jihadists backed by Western intelligence agencies. You touched on something very important. Churches in Sri Lanka on Easter Sunday morning. What could possibly be the payoff there? What would there be to gain in doing that? Apart from spreading just random terror amongst people and amongst Christians in that region, why would anybody want to do that?
Okay, so let's look at, compare this with Christchurch, for example. I think the real agenda here is dragging Sri Lanka into the global war on terror. In Christchurch, it seemed pretty obvious to me, what you've got there is you've got a country which is very peripheral to all of this, although it's supposed to be part of the Western Five Eyes intelligence services. New Zealand really wants nothing to do with the war on terror. Many of the senior officials in New Zealand don't believe in it, don't believe the narrative that we're fed by the mainstream press over here, and they want to stay as far away from it as possible. But a terror attack like that, what that starts to do is it forces them to get involved. And this, I think, is the same sort of thing going on here in Sri Lanka. But as, I mean, with a wider evil agenda, I'm also looking at the ramping up of tension between the Israelis and the Iranians and thinking, well, actually, what seems to be being perpetrated here is some kind of attempt to get interfaith warfare going in the home, in different countries around the world, and home front in New Zealand, possibly in, you know, in European countries, that sort of thing, getting people whipped up with some kind of fake attacks by Islamists. Oh, gosh, someone's got to do something about this. And I think maybe that's potentially one of the reasons that this has happened where it has. But quite clearly, this was an indiscriminate attack on Christians, which is supposedly by a group which doesn't even generally seem to attack Christians. I mean, we just got to wonder what on earth is the motive. I think probably there is no real motive there, and that the real motive is somewhere else. The real motive is just hardening the sides, as they call it, which is getting public opinion against Islamists, but also managing to try and whip up hatred between different faith groups, which I think is the old divide and rule tactic, which we saw, you know, used such a lot in Northern Ireland. The National Throw Fake Jamaat Network, it's certainly not capable of this. All the experts say that. So the question is, who is helping them? And if it's intelligence, Western intelligence services, and if it's ISIS, I think that's probably going to be the same people giving them the bombs. This whole thing about suicide bombings as well, I'd like to say something briefly about that, because I wrote an article way back in February 2007, to over 12 years ago, for the National Union of Journalists magazine, which was published in the magazine, which talked about suicide bombings and the way that this is a very pernicious use of this term when it comes to terror attacks to demonise whoever is blamed for the attacks. And I use the expression, this is a propaganda narrative of which Joseph Goebbels himself would be proud, right? And the reason I say that is because, generally speaking, there is no actual evidence of proof, because there's been no court case or nothing that's been proven in court with these attacks in Sri Lanka yet. But the media is parroting this again and again and again. For a start, on a soft target, any soft target that's not a military target, you have absolutely no need to have a suicide bomber. What can happen is someone will come in with a backpack or a box that looks like maybe a catering box or something, leave it there, walk out and detonate their bomb. This is absolutely unconvincing, that to me, that somebody would give their life away for a bomb attack on a soft target. Completely unnecessary. Now, if you're talking about something like the Beirut barracks bombing back in the 1980s, you know, where you've got two guys who drove right into the middle of the US barracks in Lebanon and killed something like 250 soldiers, yes, a suicide bomber is necessary for that sort of operation. And by the way, that wasn't a terrorist attack. It was a military operation against the American occupying army in Lebanon. So there's no need for a suicide bomber on a soft target. Absolutely pointless. The other thing is, these backpack bombs can very simply be given to somebody who thinks there may be drugs and detonated remotely. And finally, the one that nobody ever seems to think about is that, nowadays we have drones with Hellfire missiles. We have high-altitude flying aircraft with Hellfire missiles who can fire a missile, and that then is causes an explosion. Nobody knows where the explosion comes from, but the local police are primed maybe to say, well, this is a suicide bomber. And that just gets repeated all the way around the world. That exact thing happened in Iraq several times, where a helicopter had fired a missile, and the story got out around the world, oh, it's a suicide bomber, and the local people said, no, it wasn't, it was fired from a helicopter. So these are the sorts of questions that journalists need to ask, but none of them are asked.
No, they used to do. Well, they used to ask those questions on commercial and national media, but they don't ask them anymore. I'm very interested in what you've had to say there about that. It definitely intrigues me. Religious wars to harden people, to harden more Christians in the West against Muslims in preparation for movement against Iran. Maybe I'm not. You didn't say that. I'm thinking that problem, reaction, solution. We've seen it before. Tony Gosling is our guest this hour. To the top of the hour, folks. Follow Tony on Twitter. If you haven't heard him on BCFM, I know many of our listeners have. Check out the Politics Show every Friday on BCFM. Nothing like it in this country. There isn't. Believe you me. Now, let's talk about Northern Ireland. It doesn't often come up in this programme, which is interesting because I've always been an Irish Republican, by peaceful means Irish Republican, but an Irish Republican. And I've been following the story over the last couple of days of the young woman, Lyra McKee, who was killed in Derry on the Creggan estate there, a 29-year-old woman. Shot in the head. The new IRA, apparently, according to Irish News, has claimed responsibility for this. Again, I mean, it's a dreadful thing. It's a horrendous thing, and I don't support any dissident groups. I don't support violence, full stop, no matter where it comes from. You've been looking at this, and we're getting from the BBC, there was a riot, and it was in Derry, there was rioting, dissident Republicans, and some arsehole fired at people or in the general direction of people and killed this young woman who does not deserve it, should not be dead. It's a disgraceful thing. That's what they're saying. But there are other stories emerging, and we don't mean from dissident Republicans, but there are other observers there saying that how the riots came to be is not how we're being told it by the BBC. The rioting itself is of great interest, Tony.
Well, it's caused this woman's death, the rioting, but we haven't been stepping back from what caused the rioting in the first place, really. And that was clearly, it was the Chief Constable, PSNI, the Detective Superintendent or Superintendent in Derry, that decided to do this fishing operation. And Lyra McKee was caught up in reporting on the reaction to the fishing operation. But now, as far as I know, they didn't find anything, the police, but what they were doing was going around Republican homes, banging on doors, possibly smashing doors down when they were told to go away by the residents, looking for explosives and guns, which they didn't find any of. And this was what caused the rioting. People started coming out of their homes all around the area saying, you're not going to be smashing your way into our homes. We're not going back to the bad old days. And then all of a sudden, Lyra is shot dead in the head. Now, this is a very peculiar thing to happen. It doesn't seem to me random. We're told it was done by a pistol. I would suggest it was almost certainly deliberate and done with a rifle. So I think that needs to be looked in by somebody, obviously not the PSNI, because they are implicated in causing this riot in the first place by their sectarian attempts to... I mean, this is a provocation. going round houses of one political group and smashing your way in or going searching homes. This is the sort of thing we see the Israelis doing to the Palestinians and the sort of thing we saw during the Troubles. But it shouldn't be happening if there's any kind of real law and order in Northern Ireland.
Hang on, let me jump in. I have to jump in there, and you know this. You would jump in as well. Let me jump in.
Go for it, yeah.
What about the PSNI saying, well, hang on a second, if we get intelligence that there are firearms or explosives being hidden in certain houses, we must follow up on that intelligence. We know that people are not going to just open the doors and say, oh, constable, please come on in here. They're going to say to the PS tonight, we're doing our bloody job. And they will say, Tony Gosling, when we get information that there are explosives and firearms in the houses of known loyalist agitators, we would go and do the same thing there. They might say that to you right now.
Good point. Good question. But they were wrong, weren't they? There were no guns. There were no explosives in these homes. Where did this intelligence come from? Was it from Rita Katz and the Site Intelligence Agency? Somewhere, mysterious, somebody somewhere decided to feed them fake intelligence. So those people who were responsible for those riots should now have resigned. They should be going onto the television and they should say, right, well, we caused that riot and we caused that woman's death, so we're going to resign. We're going to be honourable police. We're going to let somebody who's more competent take over. But, of course, they're not doing that. We've got DS Jason Murphy, who's probably one of the people who was involved in Derry with the decision to have these fishing operations, now leading the investigation into who's done it. So he's kind of been given a platform, really, to say exactly what he wants to. I don't like this kind of thing where the police are considered always to be in the right. They're clearly not in the right in this particular case.
Let me ask you a quick question. Sorry, Tony. Yep. What should the police do about these dissident loyalist and Republican factions who don't seem to have the support of the wider nationalist or the wider loyalist community? So you've got these splinter groups, the new IRA, the real IRA, you've got these loyalist factions that are still active as well. When they hear that these people are doing stuff and they're moving weapons, what in the name of Jesus are the police supposed to do in that instance?
Well, okay, number one is you've got to catch them red-handed if you're going to take them to court. I think we all know that, don't we? If you're going to do a raid and you have actually only got flimsy intelligence, you shouldn't be doing the raid. You need to have good enough intelligence, that is to say human intelligence, possibly surveillance intelligence, that sort of thing, that when you swoop, you get the criminals, you get the evidence, and they haven't here. And they haven't stopped when they went into someone's house and didn't find anything. They then started going to more and more houses trying to find
stuff. Well, they were desperate,
yeah. But this is sectarian policing and the sort of stuff that we need to make sure never happens anywhere, particularly as we know it's a powder keg in Northern Ireland. But it's a provocation. I think those raids were a provocation, Richie, the same sort of provocation that we saw back in the 1970s that actually kicked off the Troubles in the first place. And that's why I think those guys need to resign. They need to resign now.
Here's a question, though. Here's another question. They have admitted killing Lyra McKee. So, Tony, by admitting that they murdered this young woman, they've admitted this now. Let's put our conspiracy theories to one side. They've admitted this.
Yeah.
By admitting it, they've negated any criticism of the conduct of the PSNI whatsoever. They shot a woman in the head who's there to observe. How can anybody, I'm not saying you are, you would never justify anything like that, but surely that supersedes or overrides what the police did. That's disgraceful. They've admitted it.
It's up on some website now, is it? Who is the new IRA? Who has created this organisation? Who has steered it? Is it been steered by intelligence services, as we now know, through collusion in Northern Ireland? During the Troubles, that MI5 were deeply involved, the Army Intelligence were deeply involved in steering these organisations. And we know, and we've just heard all this stuff from Sri Lanka about the potential for having, interreligious warfare being perpetrated, deliberately perpetrated. I think if we're going to be asking questions about the new IRA and them being behind this, we can ask exactly the same questions as we've heard about Rita Katz and about the IS claiming this attack over in Ceylon or Sri Lanka. We need to say who is now steering these organisations and these groups and who stands to benefit from it. I mean, remember, we've got a situation. situation in Northern Ireland now with, for a couple of years where there's been no government, no proper representative government going on. Stormont should be open, and it should have been opened right the way through the Brexit process so that the people of Northern Ireland have got a chance to contribute to that.
Yeah.
But this is all part, I think, of the close down of any kind of real proper political debate in Northern Ireland. And in fact, what's happened, of course, in the UK is a similar kind of close down where the offices of Theresa May have simply decided we're not going to have a Brexit. They're doing everything they can to stop it, and they're clinging on for grim death to this old kind of gravy train oligarchy of the Brussels EU. So there's not really any democracy in Northern Ireland. I think it would be very, very interesting to see the debate that would happen in Stormont if on the backstop and this kind of thing, if they reopened and reintroduced democracy.
That's a brilliant, that's a brilliant point, and I take it on board. Let me put this to you. You know, some of my friends listening to this won't believe their ears. Because I'm supposed to be saying most of what you're saying, but I'm not because I'm fair. Right. So you've opened up the possibility that who the hell are these Shardish dissident groups and who's really running them? That's an excellent question.
Yeah.
And it's the sort of question I would have been asking before. However, there's a big but. There is a big but in the room. And the big but is this particular group, this particular group has a political wing called SAORADH. That's S-A-O-R-A-D-H, right? It basically means freedom, right? So they're there. They marched in Dublin over the weekend, much to the disgust of Irish men and women in Dublin on social media. So that kind of gives, you know, that kind of, I don't know, sticks a few pins in the theory that they're not really a Republican dissident group, but they might be run by the deep state. There is a political wing. We can see who these people are. What do you say to that?
Okay, yeah, well, all I say is that the armed wing, the loyalists and the Republicans during the Troubles, Army Intelligence and MI5 were all over them. They allowed the, you know, the political wings to get on pretty much with their own business, although, of course, there was a bit of interference in that too. But the, I think it's pretty clear that the intelligence services, whether they are the individual military services, such as the Air Force, the Army, obviously the Army were the biggest one in Northern Ireland, or the Domestic Intelligence Service, MI5. There may even be things like Cabinet Office, little spin-offs from those, MI6, spin-offs from that as well. They take a great deal of interest in these kinds of political movements, particularly when they're involved in the possibility of splitting Northern Ireland away from Great Britain and rejoining the Irish Republic. That is the process that they want to control, that sort of thing. So it doesn't, I'm afraid I don't buy this thing that, well, because there's a political wing which is open and more public, that the armed wing is not being manipulated and controlled. This is, they spend vast amounts of money. You know, they've got, isn't it something like 4,000 officers at MI5? And this is obviously one of their main things, that they will be looking to control dissident Republicans, and they'll be looking to control dissident loyalists.
Of course, yeah.
They like to have pieces on both sides of the chessboard. That's what they do.
Good stuff. By the way, SAORADH is the Irish word for free. SAORADH is the way it's pronounced, it's freedom. That's the group. It's a good point you're making there. It's definitely, it's a question a lot of people are asking on Twitter today and over the last couple of days as well. Why would anybody do that? Why would anybody connect it with that group? Why would they want to kill a journalist or anybody like that? It would, you know, come back to haunt them, you know.
The thing that convinces me that it's dodgy, Richie, is simply the lack of any kind of accountability
for the
police starting these riots in the first place. I think that's the main point to make. I mean, the other stuff is peripheral in a way, because we have no way of knowing who's working for who within these various dissident groups. But the fact that the senior police that caused these riots in the first place have not resigned is a great telltale sign, because they should have resigned straight away.
Tony Gosling is our guest till the top of the hour. What do you make of... look, I've gotten a bit of stick for this already, because I am a bit childish about it. But the middle class, upper class, private school educated, jolly up kids whose daddies are paying for their excursions around London, taking over the city, causing disruption to travel, causing a big problem in the city in terms of retailers losing millions and millions of pounds, this Extinction Rebellion group. What have you made of this, Tony? What have you made of police officers in London dancing around with them and skateboarding with them, when some of our listeners and some supporters of the politics show on BCFM have been telling me today, the miners got their heads kicked in. Even pro-hunting people. Now, you and I are against hunting for sport, hunting animals. It's disgusting. But the countryside people, when the Countryside Alliance marched into London, they got their heads caved in. But not these kids. What's going on, Tony?
Well, I'm not sure. I think the Countryside Alliance actually did get a fairly easy ride of it because they were you know, very, very well connected in with the establishment. But look, if anyone was really serious, and I don't think the Extinction Rebellion people are, about climate change, then there's a very simple solution in London, which Ken Livingstone brought in when I was living in London in the early 1980s, which would brilliantly and very, very quickly reduce the dependence on cars. We've just had the ULEZ charge introduced for everyone every single day. And even if you just drive into London very briefly in the middle of the night and come out again, you still have to pay £12.50 now. It's the ULEZ charge, some sort of emission charge. I'm not even sure what it stands for. And it was introduced last week. But Ken Livingstone, when he was Mayor of London, he started to introduce a ratepayer subsidy to public transport. Now, that meant that he was able to reduce the fares on the buses and the tubes pretty much straight away in 1981. Now, the first year he did that, where he brought the fares down by a third. Now, stand by for this, Richie. There were 6,000 less serious accidents on the road.
Wow.
Okay, there was a drop in something like a quarter of car journeys, and he was heading towards, by 1984, he believed he could get all public transport in London free. Now, the downside of that, of course, is it means less people employed on the tubes to check tickets and things like that. But it was going to completely do what the Sadiq Khan says he wants to do with this emission charge. That is to say, people would leave their cars at home. They would travel almost all the time by public transport. It would mean a massive new investment in more buses, more tubes, more tube lines, and loads of money for it coming in from the ratepayers. And so that is what should be happening in London. It's happened in other cities around the world. I believe Luxembourg, Seattle, several cities have come down to zero public transport charges. And London under Ken Livingstone was basically, the GLC was abolished. They stopped him doing it. Sadiq Khan has brought in this incredible tax, which actually penalises poor people. He says he's Labour. He's not. He's just a robot controlled of the New World Order, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
Basically putting taxes on poor people, can you believe? So if you have to come, this is a help to sell new car scheme that he's introduced. Buy a £20,000 car, a brand new one, and you don't have to pay this charge. But if you've got a 5-year-old diesel or a 10-year-old petrol car, you have to pay the £12.50. Unbelievable, really, how people have been duped here when we could have had a scheme which Ken introduced in the 80s, which would end up with very few cars on the road, virtually no pollution, and amazingly to see the Extinction Rebellion people actually trying to picket the train.
Morons and the cyclists. Do you know who else did what? You see, I've got a few socialist friends, and they're not social democrats now, they're genuine socialists. And one of my great socialist friends, Michael Cohen, who's around the corner from me, Michael, he told me that David Blunkett did the same thing when he was at Sheffield, when he was a Sheffield councillor many years ago. He stopped all that.
Yeah, he tried to, yeah.
And nearly did. And failed because, again, he ran up against the same problems.
I think he brought the fares down to something like 3p.
Yeah, that's it.
Him, you know?
Listen, I'm not in favour of all the cars coming off the road because I want us to have that bit of freedom from the state. But at the same time, these initiatives you described there, the Livingstone one and what Blunkett was trying to do, they're brilliant. But I'm so glad you brought up Khan. He's vile, Khan, isn't he? He's sick. I mean, you can tell by looking at him, he's sick, Sadiq Khan, you know.
Well, he's running basically a gangster racketeering shop.
Yeah.
With taxing poor people, and yet he's supposed to be working for the Labour Party. How he can stand up in public, he's just talking about, oh, we've got to find somewhere of stopping pollution. Well, why don't you have a word with Ken, Sadiq? Or else you're just going to tax poor people. That's exactly why they elected you, isn't it? And it just shows how far away we are from any kind of democracy in London.
Or anywhere else. Now, on that, I'm not letting you away with the question I asked you earlier on. I'm not letting you away with it. You didn't answer it. What do we do? Do we tell these kids to get the feck home? And if they don't, we bulldoze them off the streets. What do we do? I'm all for getting water cannons and just blasting them off the roads. You know, the older you get, the more right wing you become. That's what they tell me anyway.
No, I don't agree with that. No, I think it's,
I don't mean that either.
An absolute right to protest. And I think, in a way, the police can see, many of the police looking at this, that things are getting out of control with the number of cars on the roads. Now, I wouldn't say the solution that the XR people are coming up with is the best one. In fact, to a large extent, what they're saying is, look, we don't know really what to do, but we want our politicians to do something. Now, of course, the problem with that is, if they haven't got any real analysis, is that some lobby takes over, like the ULEZ, the emission charge lobby, which will really only benefit the racketeers and companies like Capita, who will run that sort of service. And so they leave a big gap in policy, which is usually filled by some racket or other racket. So they need to be. I mean, the other thing which was absolutely ridiculous was picketing Jeremy Corbyn.
Oh, what do you? Yeah,
he's been pushing for some reduction in the number of cars in London. And so, what on earth are they doing picketing his house? It just seems they haven't actually thought through what they're doing. And they're kind of blundering around. But you know what? I really do believe in the right to block the streets, to protest, a peaceful protest. I have absolutely no problem with that. And I don't believe in the sort of way that the Chinese and many of these totalitarian countries around the world deal with it, which is just by rounding people up, locking them up and shooting them.
I agree, by the way.
They're making an important point, but they haven't thought through what the answers should be.
They shouldn't be locked up, and I certainly wouldn't bulldoze them or hose them off the streets. I jest when I say that. However, there is nothing peaceful about it when they're preventing people going about their daily business. Number one, and when they're costing millions of pounds to ordinary businessmen and women. That's not peaceful. That's terrorism, it could be argued.
No, it isn't. No, it's not terrorism, that's for sure. Look,
eco-terrorism.
Just by forcing people to either sit in a traffic jam or find it's more difficult to get to work. You know what? For a lot of people, they don't care. They just turn up and they tell the boss, oh, it took me a bit longer today. In fact, some people might even have decided to have a bit of a break in the park, enjoy the sun, and turn up for late for work anyway, and say, oh, it was the XR protesters in the way, you know. So I don't buy that as terrorism. I just think that's the sort of thing you have to put up with in any free and democratic society. You know, it could be any kind of protest that's going on, and I wish it was a bit more of a protest against the war on terror generally.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And the security state, the police state that's being introduced, and the surveillance state, that sort of thing. I'd like to see a bit more of a protest against that. But
well, here's an argument for you. Here's an argument for you, my friend. A number of your followers and my followers are saying, well, hang on a second now, Gosling, they're saying on Twitter, yellow vest protests have been attempted in this country and they've been shut down violently with a complete news blackout, number one. And number two, there is a deep state agenda to push this climate hoax. CO2 is not driving climate on this planet. We are dirtying the planet. We are causing a loss of biodiversity. We are poisoning the oceans. There's no two ways about that. That's serious. But what these little middle-class, little private school-educated, I'm not going to continue because I'll start swearing, what they're saying is that CO2, we're all going to be dead in 50 years. It's nonsense, in my opinion. There's no evidence to support it. So what about the yellow vest protest to get shut down? And yet these kids can just do whatever they want. Yeah.
We've had some yellow vest protests in Somerset, not very well attended. It wasn't shut down violently or anything by the police. It was just not very well organised. Obviously, you know, we've got a lot to learn from the French. They're doing an amazing job. But there isn't such a powerful left-wing socialist kind of movement. You know why? That's because most of what used to be militant, the socialist workers, etc., has been infiltrated by MI5 very successfully. I think it was a book called Defending the Realm, which was about Annie Machon and David Shaler.
Yes.
Written by Mark Hollingsworth, I believe. And I remember my eyes popping out of my head reading that. They said they had something like 60 or 70 agents, counter-subversion agents, within MI5 that were within the Socialist Workers Party. So the left in the UK has been thoroughly infiltrated. We know CND was thoroughly infiltrated, and that's the way they've closed it down. So they wait for groups to get together, to gather together to put political pressure. They infiltrate them. They set people against each other. They create fissures in these groups, and then they close them down. That's basically the way they do it. So that's, I think, more concerning is the security state, really. And if people want to go out and protest against too many cars, which is effectively what they're doing, I mean, I don't really agree with them protesting at all against public transport. That just seems ridiculous. But I'm absolutely with them when they talk about too many private cars. I totally agree, because the whole transport system has been, it started with the Nazis with the autobahns. It went over to the United States with the freeways. The idea of the private car over public transport has been a fascist agenda, ultimately, and the idea is to just dismantle public infrastructure and make sure that the poor have got absolutely nothing in order to help them with their lives. You know, the bus service is being cut, overpriced, privatised, racketeered, and I totally agree that there's far too many cars. It's just a question of the solutions need to be proper, I think, socialist solutions where you've got a nationally run, accountable public transport that's got a decent amount of investment, like we used to have in the 1950s and 60s, and like Ken tried to do in the 1980s.
That's a brilliant way to leave it, mate. I could talk with you all day. I appreciate you coming on today. You're back on air this coming Friday, the Politics Show on BCFM. Massive scrutiny on the Politics Show.
I'll make one point, Richie, just quickly, finally.
You can, of course, go ahead.
I was going to say, by the way, at the Easter message from Lebanon, by the Lebanese leader Nasrallah, and I was amazed to find on Facebook, I couldn't post this, it was a Lebanese English language article about his Easter message condemning the attacks in Sri Lanka. And you know what? You can post the Kuwaiti fake news article about what he's supposed to have said but didn't say. You can also post the Jerusalem Post article about what he didn't say and was supposed to say, a complete lie, but you can't post the Lebanese article itself. So if anyone wants to go to my Facebook page or my Twitter feed, you'll find the original article in there, which is actually from Lebanon and from the Nasrallah group themselves, talking about what they are really up to in the Middle East. They're suggesting that the Israelis don't have the wherewithal to actually attack Lebanon, whereas the Kuwaiti articles that you can share on Facebook say that they're scared of an Israeli attack. So the complete opposite. So Facebook is being used in this way to just shut down entire national websites for the interests of the US, Britain and the Israelis.
And that's another massive topic for another day. It's huge. Thanks for bringing it up, mate. Great to be with you as always.
All right.
Thisweek.org.uk, The Politics Show, live on Friday. BCFM, Tony Gosling. Tony, thanks for coming on today, mate. I appreciate it. And happy St. George's Day to you, by the way.
Bless you, Richie. Thanks ever so much for having me on.
Cheers, mate. Always a pleasure. Tony Gosling, live on the line to us today from Bristol, The Politics Show, as I said, BCFM, every Friday. Go to thisweek.org.uk. Tony's got a brilliant website as well called Bilderberg.org, and it is, I suppose, it's the go-to resource online if you want to learn about the Bilderberg group, the origin of Bilderberg, who's been at it over the years, who's been at it recently, what came out of it, and all the rest of it. Very interesting stuff.